to go wrong when you're on the right side. Right Side Radio. Solid, conservative, and just plain right.
Welcome back to Right Side Radio. I'm Scott Buttram from the Trussell Tribune, filling in for Phil Williams while he gets a much-needed break for a few days. You had Jeff Bohr sitting in yesterday. You've got me today. I am joined by one of my favorite people in media, in the entrance of full disclosure, Erica Thomas Huddleston. Huddleston Thomas. Erica, what are we going by today? Erica?
Hey.
Oh, there she is. There she is. Boomer was having to multitask up there. We're getting calls all of a sudden, so that's good stuff. What, Erica, are we going by Thomas or Huddleston these days?
Thomas. It doesn't really matter. Huddleston was my maiden name. But
that's a tough situation. You were in the media for a long time under Huddleston. Then you got married and under Thomas for a long time. You have people who follow you specifically for your reporting. So that can be confusing. That's a hard thing to figure out, isn't it?
Yeah, it's just whatever anybody wants to call me anymore. You know, I get called all kinds of things. So
yeah,
Erica Thomas is fine.
Yeah, I've gotten some emails calling you several things too, and
I'm sure.
Usually, when you wrote a really good story, that was the irony.
Yeah.
That always matched up with that. So for our listening audience, Erica worked with us at the Tribune for several years, widely considered by me to be the best editor we ever had. You'll have to ask her why she made the move to 1819 News. It's a media outlet that I like a lot, and I read it a good bit. But, you know, she's an editor there. She literally gave up the throne to move to 1819 News.
I did. It was a hard, hard decision. I really enjoyed my time in Trussell. It was a small but mighty newspaper that I will always cherish, and I always cherish my time there. I learned so much, and I grew so much, because after so many years in TV, I had blinders on when it came to news.
Yeah, it really.
You get to know, you know, a community, and you get to know the people in it and how each and every story impacts people in their lives, and some of the things that we were able to do at the Trussell Tribune we'd have never been able to do in television. So it was just a great experience for me, a great opportunity, and it really did grow me professionally and personally.
It really did get you, because you're a journalist at heart. That's your degree, and you had a passion for newspapers. You just ended up in television because that's where the opportunity was. But I did see the way you were able to just throw yourself into the nitty-gritty of reporting. And, yeah, I think it was good for you. I think it kind of unleashed the inner Erica that we know now.
Absolutely. You saved me from the television world, and then you gave me the opportunity to grow myself as a journalist, and I will forever be grateful for that. And really, you're much more than a former boss to me. You're family, so that will be that way forever.
Well, that's likewise. Likewise. listen, the reason I brought you on, and I'm just going to go ahead and warn you, I may keep you till 5 o'clock. As long as I could drag you into this, because you're easy to talk to and you're knowledgeable and you and I know each other, so that makes it easier. But there was a story, I believe you broke it yesterday. Is that correct? On the Doug Jones story, I didn't read it until this morning over my coffee, and I don't know exactly what time that was, but I started texting you immediately and saying, hey, you're coming on the show. We got to talk about this. You picked up on a voter fraud story in Michigan. Is that correct?
Yes. The voter fraud investigation originated in Muskegon, Michigan.
Right.
Yep.
And as you're going through the records, you found a very Alabama name in there. Can you fill us in on what your story's about and what you discovered?
Yeah, so the investigation into voter fraud began in October 2020. There was a city clerk at this town, and she noticed a woman that kept coming by and dropping off thousands of voter registration applications. And so she called police, and she's like, this is kind of weird. So the Muskegon Police Department responded, and they investigated. They ended up noticing this is actually a thing we need to look into, because on these ballots, on these applications, there was incorrect information, like addresses that didn't exist, phone numbers that didn't exist, incorrect birthdays. Some of the registrations had signatures on them. Some of them didn't. some of them had wrong signatures, that you could tell it was someone else that signed it.
Yeah.
And so they formed a task force to look into these allegations, and within that investigation, they realized this woman was connected to a company called GBI Strategies. And so by this point, the Michigan State Police were involved in the investigation. The investigation continued to grow. So they surveilled the GBI Strategies address, which was on their main street in Muskegon Heights, Michigan.
Right.
The building there was said California Eyewear on the awning. And they were like, well, that's not right. So that business had gone out of business, and the owner of the building was leasing the building to GBI Strategies, which was one of those companies that they operated in about 22 states across the United States, but they kind of go out and it's like, get out the vote push. You know, they go door to door saying, have you registered to vote? Are you going to vote? And that's a great thing that we can do, you know.
Sure.
So they were doing that, but they're also a voter registration management company. And so whenever they finally got a search warrant for this building, they found several things, including the way that they were paying, that they were allegedly paying the people that they were buying their votes with prepayment cards.
Mm-hmm. Prepaid gift cards.
They had burner phones, just dozens of them.
Yeah.
Incomplete registration forms, and all kinds of stuff was found in this building. And so MTS was like, oh, this is a lot bigger than us. And so they handed over the investigation to the FBI, and it kind of died in the hands of the FBI, which is not really that huge of a shock. But whenever you're looking at the police report, really just within a few pages of the police report, they have funding for GBI Strategies listed. And the biggest fund came from Doug Jones for Senate Committee. In 2017, 14 payments were made that equaled over $1.5 million.
Right.
And that was for this midterm election in 2018.
We talked to Jeff Poore a little earlier, and I brought this story up. And you reached out to the Doug Jones campaign.
I talked to Doug Jones himself.
Jeff tells me that the Doug Jones for Senate campaign was far and away the biggest contributor to GBI.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there was no doubt that was their bread and butter. And they made, 14 separate payments to GBI, equaling over $1.5 million.
Yeah, almost 1.6. Yeah, I was going to say just short of 1.6. Mm-hmm. If we were rounded it out, that's where we would be going with this. What did the former senator tell you when you spoke with him?
Well, I mean, when I first got on the phone with him, he was like, I have no idea what you're talking about. I don't have a clue. I don't know. I mean, he really sounded like he just didn't know anything about this investigation. He had never heard anything from investigators at all, which I'm not sure they would have called Doug Jones to ask him. I don't know. But he said he didn't know. He didn't have anything to do with the Michigan voter fraud. There's never any allegations that Doug Jones had anything to do with the voter fraud in Michigan.
Just that he was a major funder for this group.
Yes, for this group that was accused, because, like I said, the investigation fell dead in the hands of the FBI. So you can't even say that this company did anything wrong, because they were never charged with anything. They were just accused of some suspicious activity. And it's very clear from these police reports on the local level that there were major inconsistencies with these voter registration forms that were received by the clerk's office.
Yeah, and an abundance of evidence and unusual circumstances surrounding that evidence, enough that it raised the concerns of the local police department enough to reach out to the FBI. In talking to Doug Jones, did he give you a reason for why they had spent almost $1.6 million with GBI? Was there any rationale, like, oh, that, you know. And before you answer that, Eric, I want to point out to our listeners, according to your reporting, and I went back and double-checked when the election took place between Roy Moore and Doug Jones. These contributions to GBI from the Doug Jones for Senate campaign began right before that election and continued after that election. This is what we were paying for?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the contributions were technically made in 2017, but that was for the 2018 midterm election.
Okay.
So that's clear. But Doug Jones, when it comes to GBI strategies, he really seemed like he did not know anything about them or this investigation. And he did not give a full statement. All he wanted to say was that he has nothing to do with the allegations, which is true,
mm-hmm.
and that he had never heard of the investigation at all and has never been contacted by any law enforcement authority. So.
Well, that's interesting, and that's an interesting response from the former senator. I've quite frankly, have never been in a position to determine where to spend $1.6 million. I believe if I were in that position, I would know what I spent it on, who I spent it with, and what they were doing. It's a little hard for me to believe there was an expenditure of that size that the candidate doesn't really know anything about.
I mean, yeah, in my life, if I spend $15 on something, I know why and where it went. So I can't imagine if I had that, I wouldn't know. And just as a candidate, any committee that's working in your favor and working for your campaign, you should probably be pretty aware of that, where that money's going. And you know, it's been a few years, so I'm sure they helped Doug Jones win that race, and he's probably very thankful. But this all happened 5 years ago.
You gleaned some additional pretty interesting information from that police report that got my attention. They found firearms with silencers. And as you mentioned in your report, they were legal. That actually requires, I believe, to have a silencer on your gun, you have to have a federal permit. I believe that's correct.
Yes, you have to have a tax stamp.
And so they had that, but that's a pretty bizarre thing to find in a get out the vote business office. Guns with silencers.
It was bizarre. Yeah, and I think that's why it was mentioned in the first place in the police report, and they had to do investigations to make sure those silencers or suppressors were legal.
Yeah.
And then they had customized pistols as well.
Yeah.
You know,
and again, legal, but unusual.
Yes, legal, absolutely. Extremely unusual. Also something I don't have in my office, but, you know.
I've always wanted a silencer. I just don't have any reason to have a silencer.
Yeah, I wouldn't put it past me. In the legal realm of things, to collect items that way, but and you know, it might have been something like that. I don't know. I don't know who those belong to. I just know that they were legal, and so there was nothing further they could do for that. But definitely, these things were all in boxes in the back of the building, so it just kind of weird.
My feeling is this is one of those stories. This is one of those stories that I think could grow legs, and I think more questions will come from it. Erica, we need to take a quick break. Will you stay with me?
Absolutely.
Awesome. Stay with me through the break. And listeners, y'all stay with us through the break. Erica Thomas is with us, and we're going to talk more about the state of Alabama and the news going down. This is Right Side Radio. Welcome back to Right Side Radio. I am joined by Erica Thomas of 1819 News. former editor of the Trustful Tribune. And we've been talking about some stories that Erica has covered recently. If you are not a follower of 1819 News and you're listening to Right Side Radio, you're making a mistake, because that is a media outlet that will appeal to you. Erica is one of the outstanding reporters they've got there. In my very biased opinion, maybe the best reporter in the state of Alabama. But we're gonna shift gears a little bit, Erica. Erica's gonna hang out with us for a little bit, guys, and we do have a couple of other very important stories that she has reported on recently, and one that she is working on right now that we will talk about in a lot more depth in the final half hour of the show. But right now, I just want to change gears a little bit. Erica, I mentioned to you, I gave the Right Side Ruffians a pretty hard time when we started the show. I told them that every time I come in here, they treat me like a substitute teacher. They don't send texts. They don't call in, which makes my job harder, because these are some of the smarter listeners you will find anywhere in Alabama. And they have responded by sending quite a few texts, and we've gotten a phone call. So they've helped out, and I appreciate that help.
Good.
But I want to catch up.
As if you have a problem talking to yourself.
Oh, well, no. My wife will tell you I talk to myself all the time, or I might as well be, because she doesn't respond.
You can still tell.
I will be okay. But I've gotten some good ones in, and I like thinkers. I like deep thinkers. Got one in from Kathy in Madison, Alabama, and a little different take on what's taking place in Huntsville, a little different view of that. But when you look at conservative values, I think Kathy's got a valid point here. There may not be a lot of people that agree with her on this point, but I think it's a valid point, and I think it's well thought out, so I wanted to share it. Kathy says, I'm a conservative. I'm a conservative Republican, and I'm happy Space Command isn't coming to Redstone. That's a different view. We don't need more traffic, more government jobs, and more pressure on our limited resources. More commands at the arsenal makes Huntsville more dependent on the federal government. The Bring Home the Bacon Republicans are not conservative. She goes on to say, national defense and defense spending aren't the same. I think Kathy makes some valid points here. I think most people would probably say, you're right, that's a trade-off to accept those jobs and to expect, you know, to want those federal dollars to come in. Every point she made has validity in my view. It is a trade-off. And I do, though, believe that military jobs and the supporting jobs in the private sector, and that may be something that Kathy wants to give some consideration to, because while it does make the area dependent on federal jobs, and we have seen Alabama cities that have suffered when military installations are shut down. We've seen the stress it puts on the local community. So those are valid points. But they also do create a lot of supporting jobs in the private sector and helps a lot of independent businesses grow. So that was one. You have any thoughts on that?
I absolutely haven't thought of it that way. And like you said, it's just great to hear from people that think outside of the box. And that's a really good point. I wouldn't want more traffic either.
Yeah. I mean, there are a lot of angles and a lot of things to consider. And one of the things I like about conservatism is the principles of conservatism should lead to deeper thinking. And just follow common sense, which is why it appeals to me. So, Kathy, we appreciate those comments. Erica, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to go down the last 30 minutes of the show and get into a couple of stories that she's reporting on. Stay with us.
Voter fraud investigation, that's what it is, voter fraud investigation, technically.
Okay.
It just brings to light another issue that has been shown and been told about with our election integrity across the United States. And this is just going to add to any doubts that anybody has about our election system in the U.S.
Good point.
And that's why it's important for people, for anybody retired, anybody that has time off, to watch the polls.
Yeah.
I mean, you have to watch your own polls. You have to watch what's going on be involved in your community and be involved in your election process, because it's your election process and it is being compromised.
It is.
In various places.
We should remind people that when you walk into a voting place and you see the workers there, 95% of them are volunteers. They're folks just like you. My grandmother was a poll worker for 40 years, just loved it. So you're right. Retirees, people that are concerned, volunteer, get involved, get in the middle of it.
Yes, the more the merrier. The more eyes we have on this stuff, the less of a chance that it's going to be botched.
Yeah, and I want to pitch to people one more time to go to 1819 News, look the story up and read it. One of the things that really did jump out at me is this began with the local police department. Somebody in City Hall working in the clerk's office probably seeing something that didn't look right to her, reporting it to the local police. That's who started all of this investigation. They're the ones who were digging into it. This was not politically motivated at the time. It was just local police doing their job. And they got to a point, as you said, they felt like, okay, this is bigger than we thought. We need to get the FBI involved. They came in, and lo and behold, the whole investigation just kind of disappears. Now, we may find out if they're confronted, they may say, oh, no, we're still continuing that investigation, especially now that we find out you know about it. We've seen them do that a couple of times when all appearances are they were letting it die until somebody discovered it. So,
and the FBI may have found something that, you know, exonerated them from charges. Who knows?
Yeah, but yeah. It goes that way, too. It gets that way, too.
Yeah. We do know that GBI Statistics has been working since 2014 with different organizations and candidates, and most of those were Democratic candidates.
That's right. That's probably not coincidental. Let's go back to the story you're working on now that we mentioned earlier. You've done some pretty extensive coverage on libraries. Interestingly enough, we had a great text earlier asking about the library situation and Steve Marshall looking into ties between the American Library Association and the Alabama Public Library Association. So that has already been a topic that has come up. Share with our listeners what you're working on right now.
Well, as I learned at the Trustful Tribune, working there, when it comes to news, and no matter what the story is, there's always a local angle. You can always find a local angle.
That's right.
I can find a local angle on Legos, you know? Like, there's just always something you can find a local angle on,
right.
Especially in Alabama. I feel like the whole world revolves around Alabama.
We are a very diversified state.
Yes. And so I live in Baldwin County now, and one of my goals is anything that's going statewide that's impacting people, especially parents or students or children or education, I want to see if that's happening here. So if I hear a story on the radio on Phil Williams' show about, Huntsville City Schools doing something, I'm going to look down here to see if we're doing that. Because if we are, and parents are that passionate about it, they deserve to know. And that's my job as a reporter
right. In
this area to look for things. And so that's what happened with this library stuff. I saw some of the books that were presented in Prattville a couple weeks ago, and I was like, wow, that's crazy they would have something like that in the child section or even the young adult section. By the way, is 12 to 18 years old. That's what it is. It's not, when I first heard young adult, I thought, well, that would be an adult, right? But no, 12 to 18 is what the young adult age range is.
I did not consider mine adults in any way, shape, and form at 12 years old, and they didn't act like it.
I wasn't an adult really till I was 30, but, you know.
I may have been closer to 40.
Maybe not even yet. Who knows? So I went into the Foley Public Library, and there were a couple of local parents who were already worried about some of these books and had told me. So I went to look for myself, and sure enough, I easily found some LGBTQ books, and let me say the LGBTQ part was the least of the concerns of what content was included in these books.
Right.
There's sexually explicit material in these books. I mean, it reads like a romance novel, but very, very descriptive.
Like the type book, if you read out loud at a public library board meeting, they would ask you to stop reading it?
Yes. And if you read these things in the TV world,
yeah,
you would get fined from the FCC.
Right.
I mean, it's that bad. You would definitely get fined. The language and the words that are used are even, you know, they're not suitable for children at all. And so, as you know, in the young adult section in the library, kids can just go in there and frolic around and get whatever books they want. And
right.
When I was a kid, my mom would take me to the library, and she would go to her true crime section and look through those books, and I would be in the children's and young adult section all by myself.
Sure.
And I never had to worry about getting books like that. I was reading American Girl books or, you know, something about Abraham Lincoln, because that was my obsession when I was a child. But my mom never had to worry that I would open a book and see full nudity or,
right,
or learn that actually I'm not a girl, even though I was born with girl parts. That means nothing, because one of the books said, and I'm quoting, "Some people say there are only two genders, but there are really many genders. You are what you say you are because you know best," end quote. That was in the children's section.
You know, that's such a good example of what this movement is trying to teach to our young people, that is not scientifically or biologically correct. We know that. And we know that there are people within the medical community that are going along with this, and people that are telling us we're bad people if we don't go along with it. So
yeah.
It does bring it home when you find that in a library in Prattville, Alabama. And again, one of the things we talked about earlier, parents are not asking that these books be banned. They're not asking that these books be censored. They're simply asking that they be put in an appropriate area for the appropriate audience. I think based on what you just shared, clearly that's probably not something you want 12-year-olds reading. I wouldn't want my 12-year-old reading that. And I'll tell you, two kids, both of them were absolutely huge readers. I mean, they both got addicted to books at early ages. Trips to the library for both of them were a big deal. They loved going. Sarah Marie was far worse than her brother. I mean, give her a choice between a playground or a library or Books a Million, she was going to choose the books every single time. And we did the same thing your mom did with you. We would go. I would go to the section for adults, start looking for something that may interest me. And then she would stay in the section of her age group until I drug her out of there. I didn't know what she was looking at and seeing. I just assumed that the people in charge of the library had appropriate material and appropriate departments. I think probably back then they did, but I don't trust it today.
Well, in the things that have happened in our culture today is what has led to this. You know, the small things that we let slide over time has what's led to this. And now you cannot go into the young adult section without seeing multiple books with sexually explicit material in them. Things that really could scar a child,
yeah,
you know, that didn't know any better what they were reading. Because it's hard to tell sometimes from the, you can't judge a book from by its cover, you know?
Yeah.
It's hard to tell sometimes. So they might be reading along and then bam, they're instantly impacted by that. And just like movies, you know, scary movies, I would love scary movies when I was a kid. And
right,
my mom let me watch some of them, not all of them. But they have ratings on them for a reason, and it really is important. That's how parents can protect their children. They know the rating on a movie, so they say, oh, well, this isn't appropriate for your age. But when it comes to books, we don't have that protection. And nobody wants any more government, you know, control over anything.
Right.
But this is a way to warn parents, at least let them know what's going on. Not banning books, but just warning parents. Like, yeah, there might be some things that that don't go along with what your household teaches in this section.
You deal, as a reporter and a journalist, you deal primarily with facts, direct sources, that sort of thing. But so I'm going to pull you a little out of your comfort zone and ask your opinion on something, and this is related to the library situation that we were talking about earlier involving a text from one of our listeners out there. And I made the comment that I think it's important that whether we're talking about libraries or schools, that they reflect the I don't know how to phrase this properly, but that they reflect the feelings and the beliefs of the community, because they are by and large funded by the local community. I think it's important that they take that into account. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I actually do have an opinion on this. I think that, you know, where my tax dollars go, I want to know where that is and what they're paying for. And I think if there was something that those dollars were being spent on that I was adamantly against, I would voice my concerns, and that's what people can do. And so In the city of Foley, at the public library here, the latest story that I'm working on right now that hasn't come out yet, it'll come out probably tomorrow on 1819news.com.
Okay.
I actually spoke with the library director in Foley, and one of the things he said to me was, the library's job is to reflect the community, and he believes that the books that are in the Foley Library do reflect the community of Foley.
Right.
However, when I talked to the mayor, I got a different answer on that. So you'll have to check it out tomorrow when this story comes down. And I also asked the library director, what would you do if you walked into the children's section of the library and you found a book that you knew was extremely inappropriate for children? Would you remove it? And he told me no.
Who said that? The librarian or the mayor?
The library director. The library director.
Okay, so y'all, we can take the girl out of TV, but you can't take the TV teaser out of the girl. Erica has just teased a story coming out in 1819 News tomorrow. That's 1819news.com. I mentioned earlier, if you're not following it, it's probably a media source that this audience would enjoy, and you should be following it. But I will be up bright and early with my first cup of coffee, seeing if Jeff has posted it early or if he's going to make me wait till mid-morning. You never know what he'll do.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be a good story. This, just me looking into the Foley Public Library, has a discussion happening now in the city of Foley on what to do and what the next steps can be. And so that's our job as journalists, is to, you know, look into things, because the mayor was not even aware of these books that were in the library in his own city. And so I think this is just the beginning, and we're going to hear a lot more out of Foley.
Well, that's interesting. I have I'm laughing because I'm thinking of other times that you have been the one to share the information with the mayor or police chief that they were not aware of until you called. And in some cases, that they're really, those were very tragic stories, and it was a tough situation for you. But the one I started thinking about was when we called the mayor of Tarrant to get a quote from her about her police chief being arrested. And that was the first she had heard of it. So that was one of those
things. That was an awkward moment.
Had mentioned another story that I think you may have just recently put out, and I forget the one you brought up. Do you remember what we were talking about earlier?
The one that I wanted to talk to you about, because it's local to you, is the Tenson Valley basketball player.
Listen, I was going to cut you loose for the last 10 minutes, but that is such an important story. And now it is a major statewide story. We'll go ahead and get started, but would you mind hanging around for the last 10 minutes as well? I know I've stretched you. But Erica is referring to the passing yesterday of Caleb White. Caleb is a senior at Pinson Valley High School. Pinson Valley is one of the 9 cities covered by the Trussell Tribune. We're going to come back and talk about that and just discuss what we know about that very, very tragic situation to, from all accounts, an outstanding young man. I hope you guys will stay with us. We've got 10 more minutes of the show. Erica's agreed to hang around and come back for those last few minutes, and we'll get into the story on Caleb White passing away yesterday. Welcome back to Right Side Radio. I'm here joined by Erica Thomas of 1819 News. Erica, before we get into this last story, I did just get a text in from Amy in Rainbow City. I read 1819 News daily. I find often the stories that I'm interested in are written by Erica. And she had a lot of other very kind things to say, but I wanted to share that good word with you since it was directed to you, and you do a great job.
That is so sweet.
I appreciate that.
Thank you so much.
And look, since we've only got about 2.5, maybe less than that at this point, maybe 2 minutes left, and we want to talk about Caleb White at Pinson Valley. Before we go into that, I want to say to the listeners at Right Side Radio, especially you guys who have texted and called and made my day a whole lot easier. Appreciate you guys. Love doing this because of you guys. So thank you for your kindness. Thank you for all your help. Sorry we didn't get to every text, but it was appreciated. Erica, shocking story yesterday. Pinson is one of the 9 cities covered by the Tribune. Caleb White collapsed at practice. What I was told by sources very close to the situation is he got a little winded. He sat down and just told everybody, I need to catch my breath. Seconds later, he rolled over, passed out. He did not recover. He was rushed to the hospital by Centerpoint Fire and Rescue, and he was pronounced dead at St. Vincent's East, just outside of Trustful. This has hit our community, the Tribune community, very hard. Caleb was well known. He was team captain last year, outstanding player with an outstanding future. With a minute to go, have you picked up anything additional on this story?
I know that today the Jefferson County School System had media availability around noon, so I'm waiting to see what they said there. Obviously, I'm in Baldwin County, so I wasn't able to go, and they didn't make it available for remote access. But I do know that the Pinson mayor, Joe Cochran, you know, he's always had a huge part in sports over there in Pinson.
Right.
And so he knew Caleb White personally, and he posted on his Facebook, he said he's heartbroken, no words can be gathered to provide comfort. You know, he's just really hurt by this, and his message is something wonderful that we should all remember, and that is life is fleeting. Enjoy every day as the treasure it is. I know Caleb did. And that was from Pinson Mayor Joe Cochran. He has his own personal story that's very inspirational, and just hearing those words from him comforted me, and I'm sure it can comfort a lot of people in the community right now.
Good word, Erica, and good word from Joe. For those of you who don't know, Joe Cochran, the mayor of Pinson, is suffering from ALS. Very strong perspective and very much appreciated. Hug your kids a little tighter. Caleb was a fine young man with a very, very bright future as a 4-star prospect in basketball. And did things the way you want to see kids do things. So it's just heartbreaking. Our hearts go out to the White family. Again, I want to thank everybody in the Right Side Ruffian audience. Erica, thank you. I begged you to come on for 30 minutes. You hung out with me for an hour, and I appreciate you. Love you, girl, and all you do to help us
thank
out.
Thank you.
But we will see you next time, and Phil will be back next week.